The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420. The Answer.
Yes, indeed. Good morning. Thanks for joining us at 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock on Always Right Radio, AM 1420, The Answer. It is a Monday, the 15th morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024. You know what that means, of course. It is tax day, and we have to deal with the IRS. How do we describe them?
You bigoted, moronic, leftist, elite, lying sacks of crap.
That would be just about it. Yes, thank you very much, Senator Cruz. Tax day 2024. Make sure you get your public theft dollars in time, or at least your return and your pledge to pay those public theft dollars. I'm getting very, very, very frustrated on issues of taxation. For a variety of reasons, not the least of which is this ongoing, you know, it doesn't seem to matter how, what percentage of the tax base is paid by the 1%, the 2%, the top 10%, the top 30% of taxpayers. It doesn't matter. It continues to be socialism 101. Tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. They're not paying their fair share. They're paying more. They're paying their fair share, your fair share, and virtually everybody else's fair share as well. It is socialism 101. And I don't care if you're in the wealthy class, or if you're in the poor class, or if you are in the poverty class, I guess would be better, or if you're in the middle class like me and everybody else, well, just about everybody else probably listening to the show. If you're middle class, you get tired of this push toward socialism. So we're going to talk taxes today at 11:10. Patrick Hedger, Taxpayer Protection Alliance, is going to talk to us about the rates, about why things are the way they are, and what the plans are going forward. So that's coming up. We're also going to talk about Israel, of course, and what happened over the weekend with Larry Levine. That'll be at 10:10. So we have a lot to do, and we have a lot of time to do it, including time to take your phone calls. 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. We also have time for our Top 9 at 9, which is coming up after we pledge allegiance. By the way, before we start our pledge and before we get into the Top 9 at 9, I want to remind you, today is the 15th, that makes tomorrow the 16th. Tomorrow the 16th is the day that we descend on Kent State University and we support Kyle Rittenhouse. I've been talking about this for a couple of weeks now since we found out about it. Kyle Rittenhouse is giving a speech tomorrow at Kent State University. It's part of a tour that he's on with Turning Point USA, in which he talks about our rights and talks about his experiences and the fact that he was almost murdered and would have been had he not defended himself, had he not taken advantage of his Second Amendment rights to defend himself. And of course, as you know, he is one of the targets of the American left. He is an absolute pariah in their community. Not that he's a part of their community, but they follow him around. They try to torture and torment him because he did not have the grace and dignity to die when commanded. And that's literally what it was all about. So they're going to try to shout him down tomorrow. They're going to try to boo him out of the auditorium. They're going to try to cancel the whole thing and not let it happen. If you didn't get your tickets yet, get your ticket they're only going to allow 400 people into the venue. I want a significant number of us to be among that 400. And every time they try to attack him, and I don't mean that physically, we are not, of course, looking for any kind of physical confrontations at all, but anytime they try to shout him down, anytime they try to boo him off the stage, we will respond with cheers for him. We will respond with songs for him. We'll do everything we can to make sure that he knows he is welcome here in the state of Ohio and he is welcome at Kent State. So we're going to be there tomorrow, and we'll have some announcements about that probably by the end of the show in terms of where we will meet up and how we will endeavor to get inside the venue to show that support for that young kid. He's 21 years old. He's 21 years old. And he has been dealing with the most horrific things now since he was 17. All of that went down when he was 17. So I bring that up now as we do the pledge because I think they're kind of tied together as we do indeed talk about liberty. Patriots, stand, face your flag, put your hand on your heart and join us if you are a believer. If you are would rather be one of those trying to stop Kyle Rittenhouse from speaking tomorrow, then you don't believe in the flag nor the country it represents. So instead of standing tall, go ahead and take a knee like the Marxist dog that you are. For the rest of us,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, you know what time it is. It is 9:12, and as long as there's a 9 in the number, that means
it's 9 o'clock. Do you know where your headlines are? We do. It's time for the top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio.
Let's do it.
Number 1.
86 of them. 86 House Republicans on Friday voted against an amendment that would require a warrant to surveil you and me, Americans, and our communications. Representative Andy Biggs proposed an amendment that would reauthorize Section 702 of the Foreign Surveillance Act, Intelligence Surveillance Act. One that is meant to target foreign adversaries, but often surveils Americans' private communication without a warrant. The amendment tied at 212-212. A tie in the House means the measure fails. A warrant requirement is overwhelmingly backed by Americans. A YouGov poll commissioned by FreedomWorks found that 76% of Americans support a warrant requirement. Only 12% oppose it. Yet our Republican Speaker, Mike Johnson, cast the deciding vote that killed the amendment. He then went to Mar-a-Lago to huddle with President Trump and claims that Trump supports him 100%.
He's 100% with me, and he said, we'll get this job done. That's a distraction. What Marjorie's done with the motion to vacate is not helpful for our party, for our mission to save the country, because if we don't grow the House majority, keep the House majority, win the Senate, and win back the White House for President Trump, we're going to lose the Republic. You know, Maria, we often say the next election cycle is the most important one in our lifetime. Everyone knows this is for all the marbles.
Mr. Speaker, we will lose the Republic if we lose our rights to not be surveilled by our government. You just guaranteed that they can do that. With Republicans like you, why do we even need Democrats? And that's our supposedly more conservative speaker than Kevin McCarthy. How about it?
Number 2.
Iran launched an estimated 300 missiles and armed drones at Israel in its first direct strike against Israel from Iranian territory. The UK, Israel, and the US and France intercepted 99% of the projectiles. Jordan intercepted missiles over its airspace. 5 of them did land within Israeli borders. The US is urging Israel to not retaliate against Iran. And the terrorist-backed country launched dozens of drones as well on Saturday. Joe Biden made it very, very clear that the U.S. would not join any Israel offenses against Iran.
So CNN reporting is the following, John. President Joe Biden and senior members of his national security team have told their counterparts the United States will not participate in any offensive action against Iran. That's according to U.S. officials familiar with the matter. I've seen similar reporting in Reuters, Axios, CBS News, The Washington Post, and many more. I list that out to ask you, is that reporting accurate? Is that the position of the Biden administration?
I really can't go any further than what I've gone to here this morning, Kate. I'm not going to get into the diplomatic conversations that that the president and the prime minister had on Saturday night or have had at any other time.
So in other words, correct. Biden is going to continue to sell out Israel. He will not support them in any way, shape, or form. That's just the reality of who and what he is.
Number three.
Meanwhile, self-described anti-war activists in Chicago cheered after learning that Iran had launched hundreds of drones and missiles at Israel on Saturday.
So to speak, 12 days ago, Israel brazenly hit an Iranian embassy compound in Syria, violating international law again. And Iran has just responded about 30 minutes ago.
So a supposed anti-war organization, which is targeting protests at the DNC, applauded an act of war. And they used as an excuse the attack on Iranians in at their embassy in Syria. Never mind the fact that the Iranians are the ones who have been directly attacking Israel for decades. And more specifically, through their funding of their proxies, Hezbollah in Lebanon, the Houthis, and Hamas, of course, all of them attacking Israel on a regular basis. They're claiming that this was a defensive measure by Iran. And yes, they applauded the nation of Iran. You figure it out.
Number four.
All right, former President Trump yesterday accused the judge overseeing the hush money case that launches today with jury selection of giving his lawyers a short period of time to review hundreds of thousands of documents a day before the trial is scheduled to start. In a post yesterday on Truth Social, the former president alleged Judge Juan Merchan is conflicted in the case, only giving his team a short period of time to read and study hundreds of thousands of pages of documents that Alvin Bragg illegally hid, disguised, or held back from them. Of course, and as the judge knows, we need far more time than that, President Trump added. They could have started this fake Biden trial many years ago, not right in the middle of my campaign for president, and crime would not be, and time would not be a problem. This is a blatant and unprecedented attack on crooked Joe Biden's political opponent. President Trump, of course, is absolutely right, but this is what lawfare looks like. They will do anything that they have to stop him.
Number five.
The Supreme Court will hear a case tomorrow that could have huge implications for hundreds of J6 defendants, as well as special counsel Jack Smith's prosecution of Trump. The case Fisher versus the United States asks the court to weigh the scope of an obstruction statute, which penalizes anyone who corruptly, quote, obstructs, influences, or impedes any official proceeding, end quote, with up to 20 years in prison. Joseph Fisher, who entered the Capitol on January 6th, argues that his prosecution under the law for obstructing Congress's certification of the election was an unprecedented expansion of the statute. Quote, before the January 6th cases, no court had applied this section to conduct not intended to affect the availability or integrity of evidence, nor had a defendant ever been convicted of an obstruction of Congress offense outside the context of a legislative inquiry or investigation. The truth? Fisher was in the Capitol for less than 4 minutes, after Congress had already recessed, was not part of the mob that forced the electoral certification to stop. Should the Supreme Court agree with Fisher, it could impact not just his case, but hundreds of other defendants of the DOJ charged with a felony under the statute. Several defendants have already been granted early release ahead of the ruling. So maybe, just maybe, some good news in the J6 cases.
Number six.
Former Arizona gubernatorial candidate Kari Lake, who is now running for Senate and is considered to be on the short list as a potential running mate for President Trump, shocked supporters with new commentary on the issue of abortion. During an interview last week, Lake appeared to signal a shift in her position, which now sounds remarkably like the language of a pro-choice candidate.
Such a personal and private issue. I chose life, but I'm not every woman. I want to make sure that every woman who finds herself pregnant has more choices so that she can make that choice that I made. I'll never forget the first time I got pregnant, taking that pregnancy test, looking down, and I was excited, but I'll be honest, I was afraid as well. I was nervous. I was anxious. It's natural for women to be nervous and anxious when they're pregnant. I never would ever assume that any woman had the same exact feelings I had or situation I had. We know that some women are economically in a horrible situation. They might be in an abusive relationship. They might be the victim of rape. Such a personal and private.
So, yeah, Carrie Lake essentially saying, I am now a pro-choice Republican candidate for the United States Senate from Arizona. And I wonder how this will impact, if at all, her status as a shortlister for President Trump's running mate. But there you have it.
Number seven.
Kansas Governor Laura Kelly, a Democrat, vetoed a bill Friday that would have banned transgender drugs and surgeries for minors in Kansas. Bill 233 sought to outlaw transgender drugs and surgeries and allow for causes of action against healthcare providers who provided such quote-unquote treatment. The bill would also have restricted the use of state funds for transgender treatment. Quote, this divisive legislation targets a small group of Kansans by placing government mandates on them and dictating to parents how to best raise and care for their children. Kelly, a Democrat, said in a statement, I do not believe that is a conservative value, and it's certainly not a Kansan value. I'll leave that one right there for you. She believes that it's a great idea for parents to be able to abuse their children, because that's literally what we're talking about here. Chemical castration and then surgical procedures mutilating the body of their kids. Apparently, child abuse, as long as it's committed by the parents, is now A-OK with the Democrat governor of Kansas. In a related query, how the hell does a red state like Kansas get a Democrat governor? I don't get that.
Number eight.
Speaking of trans things, the thing that supposedly never happens has happened again. Another trans-identifying male athlete made the podium, bumping two girls off of it in two different track and field events over the weekend. And he would have finished almost last in the boys' events. Aiden Gallagher took second place in both the girls' 200 and 400-meter races in Oregon on April 13th. Gallagher finished the 200 in 25.49 seconds and the 400 in 55.61 seconds, made him second with the girls, would have finished 61st out of 65 and 46th out of 58, respectively, if he had run where he belonged with the boys. Wonder how proud he is to stand on that podium and take a medal away from a girl. One parent whose daughter also competed in the race sounded off on social media saying, quote, this is insane. How can anyone, capitalized, think this is fair? These girls came from all over the state to compete in this event, and this is what they got, being beat by a boy. Exactly. And apparently that's inclusive.
Number nine.
And Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed another bill last week. Just continues to hit home runs for his Floridian constituents to combat retail theft and porch piracy, while then attacking leftist jurisdictions like California and New York that failed to implement policies that address these crimes. Quote, many leftist jurisdictions are enacting policies that ignore retail left or retail theft or even encourage it. Those policies are dead on arrival in Florida. We catch criminals here and we prosecute them. End quote. Before the bill was enacted, Florida had already seen a 30% decrease in shoplifting since DeSantis took office 5 years ago. By contrast, in New York, shoplifting has increased 63%. In Los Angeles, it has increased 81%. The lenient policies for these cities, put in place have forced many retailers to lock products in plastic cases or lock their doors and close up shop for good. Governor DeSantis protecting the people of Florida, and there you have it.
This has been the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio. AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, there you go. There's your Top 9 at 9. What do you think? What do you want to talk about? You want to talk about Israel? We'll take your calls. You want to talk about President Trump going on trial today in one of the most ridiculous of all of the ridiculous charges against him in this hush money case? Literally a paperwork crime. that they took misdemeanor allegations and bootstrapped them, as the term goes, to felonies, all to try to put him in prison for 4 years and stop him from becoming president. Literally, paperwork issues about what funds were spent and where. They're calling it a hush money trial because some of the funds were used in an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement with Stormy Daniels, who was making allegations that President Trump still denies, by the way. This is one of the worst and most ridiculous of all of the ridiculous cases against him. You want to weigh in on that? We can do that. Also, I went to the movies, my wife and I, on Saturday night, and we saw Civil War. I want to know if anybody else saw it, and I want to know what you thought of it. I've got some very specific thoughts that I want to share with you, and I want to encourage you to go and watch that movie. And I'll explain why on the other side. The next half hour is wide open for you. You can respond to anything you heard in the top 9 at 9. If you would like to talk about the movie, we can talk about that. And if you're going with me to see Kyle Rittenhouse and support him tomorrow at Kent State, I want you to call me and tell me that as well. 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. Always right radio on AM 1420.
The Answer.
Okay, it's 9:34. Appreciate you joining us this morning on AM 1420, The Answer. Phone lines are open at 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. Either one of those numbers is fine. Whatever we just did in the top 9 and 9, if you want to dive into that, we can do it. If you want to talk about the Rittenhouse story, if you want to talk about the movie Civil War, which I'm going to get into in just a moment. But I'm also going to also want to get into the the lawfare trial.
Covenant brother.
No, not yet. Sorry. I also want to get into the lawfare trial, the first of the lawfare trials against President Trump in New York, as he faces this ridiculous charge of essentially shuffling his paperwork the wrong way. And they're calling it trying to cover up hush money to Stormy Daniels in order to fool voters and to change an election. And Michael Cohen is their star witness. Michael Cohen, who did 3 years in prison for being a liar, who perjures himself. Michael Cohen is their star witness, and he is going to tell everybody what an evil, horrible man Donald Trump is. That's literally their top witness. And so what we're going to do is we're going to give you a little bit of Michael Cohen from just a few short years ago, as a matter of fact, in 2016. We'll have a look and have a listen to what Michael Cohen said about Donald Trump. This is a man who obviously has proven himself to be a liar, who is now the number one star witness for Alvin Bragg in New York City in Manhattan, trying to lock Donald Trump up. So I've got a lot of information to share for you there, too. 216-901-0945. Edward is calling from Solon. Edward, thanks for joining us. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Bob, my name is Edward Torchy Smith, and I'm signed up to go to the Rittenhouse lecture, and
good.
I'm looking forward to it. It'll be the time I was on campus was the day of the shooting.
Really?
I've been to Kent before, yep, but I was there. I was to John Philo, who took the picture of that girl who won the Pulitzer Prize.
Oh, my.
This will be quite an occasion for me. Again, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to put on your website where we're all meeting.
Well, I'm not going to put it on the website. I'm not going to put it on the website, and I'm glad you brought it up. This is the reason I wanted people to call in if they're going, Edward, because what I am going to – the reason I don't want to put it on a website or say it on the radio is because I don't want any of the protesters, the you know, the troublemakers, to come to where we are and start harassing us. I don't think that will happen.
That's why I called, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that will happen once we get into the area because it is going to be heavily guarded. There's going to be a lot of police presence. There's going to be Portage County Sheriff presence there as well, campus security. So, but the point is, I want all of us to have kind of a meeting point. So what I'm doing is, Edward, I'm asking everybody that has social media to message me on my Facebook page, Always Right Radio. Just go there, or on my Twitter page, which is France Rance. And send me a DM, send me a private message and saying, I will be there. I have tickets. Where do we go? And then I will send a message to everybody that I'm able to vet and say, this is where we're going to be so that we can walk over peacefully and patriotically. That's a very important phrase to the auditorium or Seth, what's it called again? The students, what's it called? The student auditorium or
Center. It had a name to it. I forget.
Kent, yeah. It's the Kiva Center, Kent State Student Center.
Regular name.
Kent State Student Center.
Yeah, Kiva is also the Kiva Auditorium.
Kiva Auditorium. Okay, yeah. So that's where the whole thing is going to be. But obviously, you know, we want to know where how to find one another. So we're going to pick a spot where we can all kind of park near each other and then kind of walk over together so that we can sit together. And again, you know, support free speech and support Kyle Rittenhouse as he talks about his experiences and to try to push back against those verbally only, of course, you know, who are trying to shut him down.
Hey, I'm looking forward to that. And also want to hear about that movie, Civil War.
That's
an interest of mine also.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what.
One other thing real quick about that Civil War. Mm-hmm. Nikki Haley was asked at a press conference, what was the cause of the Civil War?
I know, I remember.
Question to fool her.
I remember.
The real question is states' rights. But if you say states' rights, you're showing your age. When I went to Shaker, if you put down slavery, you got the question wrong. Anyway, and of course, times have changed, and it was the root cause, but actually people succeeded from the Union, and the North wanted the Union as one, and that's why the Emancipation Proclamation, Abraham Lincoln, didn't happen until like 3 years later after the Civil War started. But
yeah, 1863. Yeah, right. Yeah, no, yeah, I remember that. And it is, you know, it's a little bit unfortunate. And thank you for the call, Edward. I appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow in Kent. Yeah, it is unfortunate. It was about states' rights, but of course it was about a state's right to decide whether or not they were going to be a slave state or not, among other things. Among other things, not the only thing. So therefore, slavery is, of course, the correct answer, too. So it is much more nuanced than people realize. But you do have to include that. Even if you're going to be nuanced, fine. Talk about state rights, but also talk about the role that slavery played in it, because it would be fair. That's all we're and it would be thorough. That's all, you know, Nikki Haley didn't seem to understand or grasp that concept. To the point about Civil War the movie, Seth, you haven't, it just opened on Friday, so I'm assuming you haven't seen it, right?
Not yet, no.
It's very new. In the theater, I was surprised, actually. It stars Kirsten Dunst, among others, a couple of other people whose names I couldn't come up with off the top of my head. They're not super, super well known. For being such a big budget, blockbustery kind of movie, it didn't have a lot of big blockbustery type of names in it, but my wife and I went and saw it on opening weekend. I cannot tell you the last time we saw a movie on opening weekend. Typically, we don't go to movies anywhere nearly as much as we used to, in large part because of Hollywood. And we don't feel like, you know, helping to monetize and line the pockets of these big, woke, you know, leftist company, you know, studio pockets. We don't want to do that. But of course, we like to be entertained, just like, you know, anybody else. So we saw at different points in time, in fact, trailers for this movie, Civil War. And you look up what it's about, and it's about a modern day Civil War. It's not about the Civil War from 1860 that ended in 1865. This is now. This is because we talk about it on talk radio all the time. We talk about whether there's any healing in this country that's possible, given the divide right now. We talk about whether or not a state like Texas, which is being sold out by the Biden regime, if they should secede from the Union and kind of form their own country. And if there were to be a secession of any kind, would you want to live in the state that is seceding or one of the seceding states, or would you want to live in the United States? And we talk about these things all the time. If the government is going to look what happened on Friday, one of the top stories was on our top 9 and 9. 86 Republicans voted against an amendment that would require our Fourth Amendment rights to be respected and protected. That would force the government to get a warrant before they could surveil us and stalk us and follow us and watch us. Kind of what they didn't have when they went after Donald Trump and surveilled him illegally in his campaign in 2016. we talk about, you know, the attack on our First Amendment rights. We talk about the attack on our Second Amendment rights. We talk about the attack on our Fourth Amendment rights. We talk about all of the things that would lead a, you know, people in what was once a free country who don't see any way back toward the constitutional originalism that our founders intended, with the laws reflecting that intent, reflecting that document, with the practicing of those laws and the, you know, carrying out of laws based on that, rather than, you know, tyrannical authoritarian style government, which the Democrats continue to bring, all while projecting that on Donald Trump, saying he's the one who said he'll be a dictator on day one. It's so ridiculous. But those are the kinds of things that could lead to what people just talk about as a talk radio topic, a civil war. You know, how would that look? Where would you want to be? How would they do it? Would it be a line down the middle of the country separating east from west? Would it be north from south? Would it be just, you know, hodgepodge picked apart here? This state is a part of this new country. This state. I mean, you know, it's just fodder for talk for the most part. Well, they made it into a movie. And so we saw the trailers for it, my wife and I, at different times, and then we talked about it together, and we said, yeah, we got to go see that movie. And I will tell you, I went into it with a bit of a wary feeling. I was cautious because I know it's Hollywood, and I was afraid I was walking into a woke trap, that they would turn it into a civil war between the good side, which would be, you know, the progressive freedom to be who you identify as, and the bad side, the secessionists, the insurrectionists, red hat wearers, the MAGA side, or that they would portray it in some way like that. And so it would be a battle of good and evil. This is what I was wary of. I didn't sense that in the trailers, but I did. Just because it's Hollywood, I'm just on alert, you know? And so I have to tell you, after watching that movie, and I read a review of it yesterday, by the way, and I was a Bloomberg somebody reviewer in a local paper. I think it was whoever it was, doesn't matter. And they were complaining, for the most part, that it didn't have what I was afraid that it might have. They were complaining that it didn't take sides, that it didn't blame one side for being the evil secessionist side and the other side for being the good, you know, United States of American side. They were angry and saying the movie had nothing to say. But I'm going to tell you what that movie did. That movie did exactly what it intended to do, and that is to show what the horrors of a civil war would look like. Rather than blaming one ideology or the other, I think there was only one phrase, actually. And it was a line in which they talked about the Antifa massacre. And even that was articulated so with such ambiguity that you didn't know, did that mean Antifa massacred people or did Antifa get massacred? That was about the only term that was modern. In other words, They didn't talk about MAGA. It wasn't about Republican. I don't think the word Republican, nor the word Democrat, nor the word conservative, nor the word liberal or leftist or progressive, I don't think any of those words were uttered in the entire movie. Can you believe it? They didn't want it to be, like I said, blue versus red or good versus bad. They wanted to show you what war looked like when it came to American cities. When an RPG is fired at and into the Lincoln Memorial. When the White House is stormed by an army. When citizens are being rounded up and killed and dumped into mass burial grounds. When cities where people are hiding behind, you know, drugstore corners. When we see, let me put it to you another way. When we see war video and war footage from, you know, embedded war correspondents and so forth, all of the war footage we've ever seen is from foreign countries, isn't it? Except for the Civil War. Except for the Civil War, which is hardly recognizable because of the period, 1860s, when we see war, what war looked like in Vietnam, When we see war footage, we see what war looked like in Bosnia. When we see war footage, we see what war looked like in Fallujah. We see what war looked like in the streets in Afghanistan. We see what war looked like in the streets of Korea. You get my meaning? We don't fight wars in American cities. Collateral damage, homes, businesses being destroyed, people hiding and fleeing for their lives and trying to stay low because soldiers in the streets are looking everywhere. And we saw a video of what war looked like in Poland. We've never seen what it looked like in America. Because who would ever be foolish enough to come into the United States and invade and attack us on our soil, right? Well, the answer that was provided by this movie is, you know, is us. What if we did it? What if we brought war into the streets of America, our small towns and our big cities? There were lines in the movie that were really poignant, too. And just to give you a little plot synopsis, the movie centers around some photojournalists. Kirsten Dunst is probably, again, the biggest name there. And they basically do exactly what it sounds like. They're war correspondents. There's a young wannabe and newbie into the game who wants to be a war photographer, and they present what happens in these, you know, battleground scenarios to the rest of the world to commemorate and to look at and to decide how it makes them feel and so forth. But so it follows these journalists around who are trying to make their way to Washington, D.C., from New York, I believe, to Washington, D.C., to go and try to score an interview with the president while the president is trying to hold on to the republic. The other side is called the Western Front, Western Forces. And you know, and this was also very interesting, too. In order to make it appear as though it wasn't one side, you know, one of our current Republican or Democrat, conservative or leftist, you know, ideologies that broke away, the two primary states that were secessionist states were Texas and California. They did that because Texas is red and California is blue. So who are you going to blame? Right? And then they said Florida was kind of an add-on. So in other words, they tried to make it look again like as though we're not saying progressives are doing something wrong or conservatives are. It's just this is what happened. Two states split off from the country for whatever reasons they have. The two of the, you know, geographically largest states in the lower 48, right? California and Texas. So this is, you know, this is kind of how they presented it. And again, rather than focus on good versus bad, they focused on death. They focused on trauma. They focused on, you know, horrific scenes and scenarios. And this is what life would be like. So when you go on talk radio or you go online into your social media spaces or when you listen to podcasts and people saying, you know, it's time for another civil war. It's time for another, you know, or another revolutionary war. Just so you know, this is what it's going to look like. And you can be on whatever side you want, but just know that all sides are going to suffer, all sides are going to die, all sides are going to our nation will never recover, we'll never have what we once had, and if you feel like maybe that's a good thing, then you want to push for something like that. If you feel like that's a bad thing, maybe you want to avoid that at all costs. But when we talk about these things like that, you know, I remember doing a commentary a few years ago. Now this might have been. No, I think Trump was president. I was going to say this might have been toward the end of Obama, but I think Trump was president. But we were just talking about how I can't and I won't live with and pretend to get along with and pretend to be friendly with people who won't do or say certain things. In other words, there's no meeting of the minds here. It's like, hey, we'll agree to disagree and shake hands and sit down and have a beer. Not with people who say that cutting the healthy organs off of children is a good thing and that it's affirming care. I will never be able to sit down and say, yeah, we're cool. If somebody says to me, dude, what's wrong with you? Don't you know men get pregnant now? Yeah, men can get pregnant, and boys should have tampon dispensers in their school restrooms. We're not going to share a beer. We're just not. when people talk about that kind of stuff, there's no reconciling with people of a certain mindset. If people are going to try to continue to groom children into deviant lifestyles or into acting like puppies or take them to parades, I'm never going to be able to be friends with a parent of a child who takes their child to a pride parade and has them pet the head of a leather thong wearing degenerate, deviant, hairy guy in lingerie walking around with puppy ears, walking up to little kids and letting little kids pet his head while his, like I said, thonged butt cheeks, are exposed for all. I'm never going to be a friend to that parent. I feel like there should be two sides. I feel like you live over there on your side of the world, I'll live over here on my side of the world. And there are going to be some things we cannot come to an understanding or agreement on. And if you feel that way about any issues, the abortion issues, the cultural issues, the economic issues, the socialism versus capitalism issues, Marxism versus liberty. I mean, if you feel like, you know, there are some things that are just, you know, we're not able to come to any kind of an agreement, this will forever be our dividing point. If that ever makes you think we need a secession, and if it takes war to do it, then that's what we have to do, then watch the movie. That's my message. Watch the movie. If that is how you feel, because you don't know what war looks like. No matter how many times you've seen Saving Private Ryan, you don't know what war looks like, because those are French cities, not American cities. Until you see the tanks in your neighborhood going down your street, in your township, your big city, aiming at enemies in iconic buildings and locations that you visited for your entire life, until you see what that looks like, you won't understand. And I think that's all they were trying to do in this movie. And plot wise, like I said, it was very thin. It was just, you know, we're reporting on war and what civil war looks like in the United States, and we're doing so without political commentary. This is just what it would look like. That was a message, and I thought it was a very, very good one. I thought it was a very, very worthwhile movie. So that's it. That's my Siskel and Ebert review of Civil War. But I highly recommend. And then once you see it, if you would like to call back and discuss it at some point on a future show, I would certainly welcome that. That was probably a little longer than I wanted it to be, because I want to play some Michael Cohen for you. We'll have plenty of time, though. We still have 2 hours to go. But I'm going to play some of Michael Cohen back when he was telling you what a wonderful, glorious man Donald J. Trump was, and what a fine human being he was, because you need to remember those words. Those were the words that he had to tell, or I'm sorry, that he had, you shouldn't say had to say, that he had, words that he chose to say back in 2016. Now he is the star witness for the prosecution against Donald Trump in this Manhattan hush money trial. And he's going to get up there today and he's going to do what sent him to prison for 3 straight years. He's going to lie. That's what he's going to do. I want to share that story with you. We're going to talk about Israel and whether or not Israel and the United States should retaliate against Iran for that terrible attack on Saturday, or that intended terrible attack on Saturday. We got Larry Levine coming up. So we have a lot to do in the next 2 hours. Stay here. It's Always Right Radio on AM1420.com.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
This is Always Right Radio on AM1420. The Answer. Here's your host, Bob France.
It is indeed, and hour number 2 is underway. 6 minutes past 10 o'clock on this Monday, the 15th morning of the 4th month in the year of our Lord, 2024. And, we are closer today to World War III than we were on Friday. That's because on Saturday, Iran launched airstrikes, over 300 missiles or drones at Israel, drone attacks at Israel. 99% of them, we are told, were shot down. Only a handful of them made it in, but that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the effectiveness. It's kind of like in the criminal justice world. I've never understood why attempted murder carries a lighter sentence than murder. If I shoot you and you die, I get X. If I shoot you trying to make you die but you live, I get Y as a sentence? It's lesser? I don't understand that. The intent is what matters here. And the intent was from the Iranians, who have been trying to wipe Israel off the map, as they have made it known that is their policy for years and years and years, through their proxies, through Hezbollah, through Hamas, through Palestinian Islamic Jihad, through the Houthis. They have been trying to do this. Now they launched themselves. And what will the response of the United States be? That's the question.
Following John, President Joe Biden and senior members of his national security team have told their counterparts the United States will not participate in any offensive action against Iran. That's according to U.S. officials familiar with the matter. I've seen similar reporting in Reuters, Axios, CBS News, The Washington Post, and many more. I list that out to ask you, is that reporting accurate? Is that the position of the Biden administration?
I really can't go any further than what I've gone to here this morning, Kate. I'm not going to get into the diplomatic conversations that the president and the prime minister had on Saturday night or have had at any other time. We want to make sure that Israel can defend itself. We actively participated in that self-defense on Saturday night. We will stay committed to Israel's self-defense. At the same time, we want to see tensions de-escalated. We don't want to see a war with Iran, and we certainly aren't looking for a wider conflict in the region.
Nobody wants to see a war with Iran, but if you think that the way to deal with a bully who has just punched you in the face is to cover up a little bit the next time they punch you so it doesn't hurt as bad, if you think that just cowering and saying, well, we blocked most of the punches, we blocked most of the blows, and he won't do it again now because he saw how ineffective it was. If you think that's the best way to deter a bully from kicking your A again and again and again, then you are absolutely without clue. Nobody wants war with Iran, but you damn well better prevent one by making sure Iran knows this is what the consequences are of attacking an ally. All right, let's talk about this now with Larry Levine. Larry Levine is the vice president of the Israel Leadership Institute North America. You can read him and see his work at LarryMLevine.com. He also hosts the podcast, The World Doesn't Need Another Podcast. Larry Levine, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing fine, considering the world's being blown up.
Yeah, well,
it's crazy.
We hope it isn't. I mean, let's start with the good news. They fired an offensive. Some said that it was, you know, kind of an intentional slow walk of an offensive. And, you know, they really didn't want to do much damage, but they wanted to make a statement kind of a thing. I completely disagree with that assessment. In fact, I did have a clip. I don't have time to play here, but retired General McKenzie said this was their maximum effort. This is their maximum effort. You don't fire that many different projectiles into Israel without an intention of doing damage. This was what they wanted to do. They just weren't very good at it, and the defense forces to shoot some of those things down was exemplary, and that's a good thing. But that does not change the intent here. So, Larry, what do you suppose the next move should be?
Let me just comment on what you said. Mm-hmm. That is complete nonsense, because personally, I believe the United States behind the scenes was helping coordinate this. They were in touch with Iran. They've already said they were. If this was the maximum, you would have had Hezbollah firing in the north, the Houthis, and who knows who else, because I think the West Bank probably has rockets as well. This was because Iran was in a very tough position. They wanted to look tough to their domestic audience, but at the same token, they were told, don't go past this line right here. So they had to kind of, you know, walk the line, so to speak, and not go over it. So this was not a maximum.
So you think General McKenzie...
And they also alerted us.
You think General McKenzie is way off here?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's the party line that you're hearing from most of them.
Go back to the first part of what you said. Yeah, well, actually, before you continue there, you said you think that America was working with them? That I may have misheard you. What did you mean?
No, absolutely. No, you didn't mishear me. I believe that through diplomatic channels, the United States told them that you better not go past this line. And we know they were in contact with them. We also know that Iran warned the United States, gave them plenty of warning. And there was a lot of intelligence, apparently from the Saudis and others, telling Israel and the United States when and where. So this was a symbolic attack, and they might have used all their weapons, but, you know, you've got 2.5 hour warning, and you also have Iran telling you. So I think it'll come out later that the United States was in contact with them. And most of this was just for domestic, probably ours as well, you know, for reasons for domestic, certainly Iran's own population. So, and it doesn't matter with those guys. Most every missile was knocked down. They still declare victory. You want to explain that one to me? I don't get it.
Well, because they've got a population of people. Remember, we're talking about an Islamic theocracy that doesn't have tell the truth to their people. I mean, you know, they have their own version of Baghdad Bob from during the Iraq War. They have to tell them that they were successful. I'm sure they didn't tell the Iranian people that, and I'm sure they don't have access to international news, actual real news that said 99% of them were knocked down. So they have they've got a country to appease, a country of Jew hating, Israel hating, and, you know, believers. That's the only reason I can say that. But I just want to go back now. So you're saying that the Americans knew, we knew, the Biden regime knew, the Pentagon knew, that Iran was going to fire, missiles and rockets and so forth and use drones to attack Israel. And they knew it and they were okay with it because they said, just don't go too far. What if yeah. Some of those had not gotten knocked down? And what if they had hit a village and there were, you know, 50 dead Israelis? That's a heck of a gamble to take. I'm just having a hard time believing that even under this regime, that we would have taken such a risk.
Well, think about it. Those are pinpoint accurate rockets, especially the intercontinental ones, mm-hmm. And they could even they had missiles going over Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is that's one of their most important holy sites, mm-hmm. And they had lights on them. This was show. And just think about this for a second. If Iran had nukes and you had that many missiles being fired, all you needed is one to explode. I mean, this is a dire situation. I think this goes back to Iran becoming a nuclear state. And I think that's one of the main reasons why they started this war. The other was the Saudis and the peace deal that was coming. And the one good news from all of this is that Iran is outed, at least to the world. We all knew they were behind it, but now they're not hiding behind their proxies. Now you have a direct response from Iran and their land to Israel. So there can be no doubt.
It's important, too, Larry, to point out that they're calling this a retaliatory strike. That the four officers, there are three generals and four officers that were killed in that embassy in Syria by the Israelis, is what prompted this. So they're saying, hey, we were victimized. We're the ones who got punched by a bully, and we're the ones who had to punch back. That's their message to the rest of the world.
Well, it wasn't the embassy; it was an annex and
consular building, right? I think it was a consular building.
Yeah, it's one of those tomato. Yeah. Look who they killed. They killed the head of the military in Damascus, and what they're doing is going after another country, which is Syria. They've already got Lebanon. They've already got Yemen. You could argue they have Iraq. I mean, this is a country on the move. They want to make the entire Middle East part of their caliphate, yeah. A Shia caliphate. And the whole thing's a ruse. Israel didn't go in and kill civilians. They had obviously really good intelligence that lots of bad guys, they decapitated the leadership that was moving all the weapons into Syria. So I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. And this was because they spoke up so quickly, they put themselves in a bad position. which is unusual because Iran is usually more thoughtful than that. They don't just react. So I think they were taken by surprise by it. But so, as far as what is, I'm sorry?
No, no, go on. Finish your thought, please.
Yeah, as far as what Israel should do, they find themselves in a very unique situation. Most of the leadership in Israel wants to go in, but now all of a sudden, you know, a week later after having the Biden administration completely trashing them and beating them up because of Gaza, now all of a sudden you have several, you have the Group of Seven, you have Jordan, you have Saudis, they're all at least publicly saying they're on their side. So maybe Israel should hold back a little bit, but I think you got to realize you're in the Middle East where things don't work the same way as what we think. And if you don't do something, Iran's going to take that as a sign of weakness, which I believe the reason why they attacked was they took what Biden has been saying, and Jake and all the other people there, mm-hmm. as weakness for their support in Israel. And that's one of the reasons why they figured, okay, this would, if you're going to do this, this is a good time for them to do it.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. They see weakness here because of all of the equivocation and the demand for a ceasefire and don't go into Rafah and there's too many casualties and not enough humanitarian. Of course, absolutely, they see the Biden administration is being very, very weak in their support of Israel. So they figure they can do this. And they were right. If what you're saying is true, and they knew that Iran was about to make this launch, but they kind of told them, hey, don't make it too heavy, and didn't tell Israel that it was coming, then it is a huge, huge red flag. And what I want to know is if Israel decides to retaliate, and I know Biden said and Kirby said and Sullivan said and all the rest of them said that they will not. But if Israel does decide to retaliate, are they going to tell them ceasefire now, just like they did with Hamas?
Yes, they're already doing that.
Well, it hasn't even started. But they did say, and even, you know, Chuck Schumer, not that he's a policymaker, but he's the majority leader of the Senate. Chuck Schumer condemned this and expressed 100% support for Israel in this. Now, I don't know what that means. Does that mean he wants them to go ahead and launch, you know, retaliatory strikes? But here's the thing. If the Biden administration wants to avoid war with China, if the Biden administration wants to avoid war with Russia, why would they allow the ally of the Chinese and the Russians, Iran, to make this strike if they knew that it was coming? I mean, because it's a stare down now as to whether or not we're gonna respond and support our ally, or we're not. Basically, then emboldening them to take another one and take another step forward and another step forward. I mean, we're talking about a game of chicken here that has some, you know, serious international consequences.
Well, that's assuming that whose side they really are on. I have real problems with the Biden administration because only a few days before this happened, they gave in and let them have $10 billion in sanctions relief. They've done this now twice this year, and the sanctions were from the Trump administration. So that was, if you notice, very, very quiet. $10 billion just a few days ago. So there's a lot going on behind the scenes, and I still to this day cannot figure why there's so much support for Iran. I have my guesses, and part of that would be somebody's getting paid off somewhere because Iran is, they haven't even mentioned Iran's name throughout this entire time. When everybody says it's Hamas, is independent, and this one, and the reality is this is the head of the octopus. And at least people now know where it's coming from. Iran doesn't share a border with Israel. There's no specific problem with Iran and Israel. In fact, the people in Iran are pro-Western, just not the top, not the mullahs. Not, this is a religious war, and at least they're outed from that standpoint. So you're in a very tough area of the world, and you have to show strength or this will be normalized. That's the problem. They've crossed the Rubicon, so to speak, or the Nile or whatever, and this cannot stand. So at some point, Israel is going to have to do something.
We're talking.
And, you know,
go ahead.
Israel can go in. They could knock their, you know, S-300s out from Russia. They could. They can do. It's like 10 things they could do to really put the hurt to Iran. They could knock out their petrochemical industry. They can They can go after the nukes, even though they're, you know, in mountains, you know, 80 meters down. But they can completely cripple that government and in not a very long time to do it. And, you know, the United States, the same thing. So, in fact, they probably should. Israel's doing the work for us because this is a growing threat, not just for Israel, but for the world. We don't need a crazy Islamic theocracy death cult that is gobbling up states in the Middle East. It will come back to bite us, and we're going to look at this 5 years from now as saying this was the opportunity to get rid of them, unless we don't.
Well, Larry, I want to bring this closer to home now and actually into our home because of what we saw in response to this announcement on Saturday. And by the way, we're talking with Larry Levine. Larry is vice president of the Israel Leadership Institute North America. You can follow him online at LarryMLevine.com. Larry, at an anti-war conference type event, strangely enough, Anti-War Chicago, which is just anti the kind of war that they don't like, I suppose. They were having this thing on Saturday as the attack was announced, and the response was an eruption of cheers from the group of anti-war activists who really are anti-Israel activists. They're pro-Palestinian, but they announced that the launch had taken place and the attack had taken place, and they were just thrilled. They went on to chant death to America and death to Israel, the same thing they did in Dearborn, Michigan last week, death to America, death to Israel. So I want to bring this home. I don't think Iran has the capability of striking us from where they are, but we have supporters, proxies, whatever you want to call them, you know, sympathizers already in the United States who hate this country. They hate Israel. They do not want us to back Israel. And I'm wondering how long before there is an attack inside the United States on behalf of Iran and the rest of the, you know, the radicals who are trying to create this, this one world theocratic government.
Well, add the fact that you have millions of people pouring across the border. This is worse than where we were behind 9/11. And I remember when 9/11 happened, people that were very involved in this field. Said 9/11 was probably not enough to wake everybody up, because this is a generational religious war. And now you have everybody in place. You have no idea who entered the country, even though there probably were plenty, you know, that were here already. And it only took a few people to make a 9/11. The terrorist experts, their terrorism experts, are now all galvanized because they see what's happening. They hear all the chatter out there, and they're trying to wake everybody up that this is something that is in your neighborhood, it's in your town. And think about this. In a normal world, how can anybody be pro-Hamas? Hamas slaughters babies. They don't care about their own people. They starve them out. They hide
them. But Larry, that's martyrdom, though. But that's martyrdom. They're just sending those babies, I'm talking about the Palestinians. I'm talking about Hamas allowing their own people to be killed in large numbers, because that's just martyrdom, and that's just advancing the cause and, you know, to establish the caliphate and so forth. And slaughtering Jewish babies and Israeli babies, I mean, that means nothing to them because those are little devils anyway.
Extra point.
Yeah.
So, well, any religion out there that supports the type of things that they do, in whatever life, in this life, so you can get to a better life after this, how can anybody support that in any scenario? And we're used to Judeo-Christian values, where we value life, and it's hard for Americans to understand that these people don't. They believe that the next life is going to be important. They'll have 72 versions. They'll live in Musk, and, you know, I just heard another one that, If they're not virgins anymore, in that world they come back as virgins. I mean, no offense, guys, but that's crazy. And you're entitled to believe anything you want. Don't impact me. And that's why nobody here can understand it, because they look at it through a Western prism. And Israel, unfortunately, understands what it is and what's going on. And, you know, they're in a situation where it's an existential threat, and they have to take it as such. It's a very serious thing. So, you know, Iran wants to take over Jordan next, so that Israel will be completely surrounded.
What's really sickening is the number of Americans who have made it very clear that they don't care if it's an existential threat to Israel. If Israel doesn't exist anymore, they don't care. They don't mind. It doesn't bother them. And sadly, there are enough self-loathing Jews in this country. I talked to one of them on Friday that don't back Israel as well. And I don't think they would give a rip if Israel was no longer on the map. And if the Sharia Tlaib's little post-it note that she has on her office map of the Middle East with the little post-it note that says Palestine over Israel, you know, if that became reality, they wouldn't care. Sad to say. There are a lot of Americans
People, I call them Seinfeld and Bagel Jews. That's the only sum total of their involvement with Judaism. And frankly, they're just far left Jews. I don't know about self-loathing. I they're just people that, you know, Christians are like that too in some circumstances. But everybody assumes every Jew is going to support Israel. But these are Jews that are marginal at best. And the other option, we call them as a Jew, because they'll come out and say, as a Jew, I don't support Israel. Now, like I said, there's some total of involvement with Judaism, having a bagel and watching Seinfeld. Yeah. That's it. So I don't even count them. I will tell you after October 7th that a great portion, not enough, but a great portion of Jews have woken up to realize where they are right now, especially ones that I know that were leaning left. They were shocked that Black Lives Matter didn't support them. They're shocked at the anti-Semitism. And people like me have been telling them for the last 20 years that I don't hate Arabs in particular. I certainly don't hate black people. But there is a problem in those communities. Wake up. And shocking.
It will say a lot, Larry, about the real attitude adjustment, if you will, that American Jews have had this November. If they continue to support the same administration and vote to keep that party in power in the overwhelming numbers that they do, that will tell us a lot about what their real feelings are about themselves and about Israel. Larry Levine, thank you for coming on. I appreciate your analysis of this. We'll stay in touch.
Thank you. One more thing. Israel Watch is a website that's been out there that I run that has everything to do with the Middle East in one spot. You can read the Arab media and the Jewish media and the United States, everything. IsraelWatch.com.
Got it. Thank you, Larry. Appreciate it.
All right.
10:30. We'll take a news break here. We'll come right back on Always Right Radio, AM 1420.
The answer.
Okay, it's 10:35. Thanks again to Larry Levine. Phone lines are open now at 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. Certainly welcome your thoughts. Excuse me. Certainly welcome your thoughts on the conversation that we just had with Larry. But I do want to get into some other things as well, particularly this half hour. Coming up in a half an hour at 1110, we're going to shift to taxes. Why? Because today is April 15th. It's tax day. It's time for the government to dip into your pocket, take your cash away from you that you spent all year earning and sending it to Ukraine. And then they're going to reach into the other pocket. They're going to take money that you spent all year earning out of your pocket, and they're going to send it to some LGBTQ organization that's going to try to groom your kids into changing their gender or sex. What, you think I'm kidding? They're going to reach into your pockets and take all of your hard-earned money away and push every woke policy, department, platform, school building, everything and anything they can. And I, for one, am just done, disgusted with it. So we're going to talk taxes coming up at 11:10. Patrick Hedger is the founder of the Taxpayers Protection Alliance, tax watchdog dog organization. So we're looking forward to that conversation. Between now and then, though, I also wanted to do this with you because this is just as important to me. What Seth, where did you have in your final four? Did you have lawfare against President Trump advancing to the championship game, or where did that tap out for you?
I have to pull up my bracket.
You don't remember? Here's mine while you pull yours up. We did a Sweet 16 Biden bracket buster of the things that Biden is screwing up the worst, or the things that worry you the most. My final four: border security against medical freedom, and groceries against DEI. I put the cost of groceries against lawfare, which was in the Elite Eight round, and I gave it to groceries, and I really wonder if I made a mistake there. And I really wonder if I shouldn't have put lawfare on that, you know, in that victory spot.
I had because, lawfare advancing, yes.
So what was your championship matchup?
Border and lawfare.
And who won?
Border.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's between those two, I think it's probably good. I'm looking at it again, and I'm wondering, because what Trump is about to go through here, this is phase one, obviously, as we know. There's four phases of these lawfare charges against him, you know, broken up into 91 different charges, but there's four different, you know, jurisdictions. And this one is just the first one, and it is so ridiculous. The star witness for the prosecution, Alvin Bragg, in Manhattan, in this ridiculous hush money, you know, paper shuffling thing where they took what should be misdemeanors and they tried to bootstrap them to felonies in order to lock Donald Trump and make sure he could never be president again. There's nothing they will not do to this guy. Nothing. And I don't care how you feel about him. I don't care if you love him, loathe him, or in between, a little bit of good, a little bit of bad, which is where I am. There's a lot of really great stuff, and there's a few things that bother me. But I don't care who it is. What's being done to him, it cannot happen, or else it can happen to anybody, any of us. Their star witness is Michael Cohen. Cohen is going to sit up there and call him every name that you can call a person other than a man. He's going to condemn him. He's going to criticize him. He's going to lie about him. Michael Cohen has already gone to prison, by the way, for 3 years for lying. But now he's going to testify against Donald Trump about what a horrible man he was just 7 years after he said these types of things about Donald Trump. And this kind of matters when credibility is an issue, and it should be, when you're talking about potentially locking up a former president, trying to undermine democracy, as the left likes to talk about democracy all the time, taking the choice, the opportunity of the people to vote for whomever they wish. Credibility should matter when it comes to the witnesses, especially the star witnesses, star witness. And in this case, Michael Cohen. This is what Michael Cohen said just 7 years ago.
Thank you. Thank you all. I'm honored to be here today.
This is in Cleveland, by the way.
At the New Spirit Revival Center with all of you and my dear friend, Pastor Darrell Scott. The word of the 2016 election somehow has become racist. And a racist is defined as a person who believes that all members of each race possess characteristics and abilities specific to that race, especially so as to distinguish it as inferior to another race. I've lost count as to how many times the disgusting, liberal, mainstream media have attempted to label Mr. Donald Trump a racist, a xenophobe, and a bigot. And let's not forget sexist, misogynist, narcissist, Islamophobe, anti-Hispanic, anti-Semite, demagogue, and countless others. It's disgraceful. As the son of a Holocaust survivor, it's hard to sit back. Actually, it's morally wrong to sit back and do nothing when someone who you know, someone who you hold in great esteem and truly care about, is being so viciously attacked day in and day out. Not only is Donald Trump not a racist, he believes that all people are part of one race, the human race. One year ago, while watching CNN, I was truly angered by the comments being made by a moderator and the various surrogates. None of them know Mr. Trump. Most have never even met him. And yet they feel justified and eager to brand him as a racist. So what to do? What to do? Well, I knew what to do. I called Darrell Scott and I said, we need to start a coalition. And I said to him, a national coalition of minorities for Trump. Daryl said, I love it. And I said, I want you to be the founder. Having met Mr. Trump several times and knowing the statements to be patently false, Daryl immediately agreed. But let's be tomorrow, he said. I want to think about this and I want to pray on it overnight. And the following morning, it was very early, Daryl called and agreed, but under two conditions. First, that we change the name to the National Diversity Coalition for Trump. And I asked why. And he said, well, that's condition number two, because we all know how Daryl speaks. Because I want you to be a part of it, and being white, you just don't fit under the definition of minority. I said, but I'm Jewish. He said, that's not going to save you, my friend. So he goes, if you're in, I'm all in. And so we began this National Diversity Coalition for Trump, which has now grown to over 700,000 people from every single race, religion, creed, and color.
So Michael Cohen helped form and found this National Diversity Coalition for Trump because he loved the man so much. But because he is an absolute tool of Satan, and I can't really think of any other way to say that, and I'm sorry, because there's no way you go from that to what he's about to do on the stand in this trial, which is starting today with jury selection, in which he's going to lie and tell everybody that Donald Trump, because he has already done this, Donald Trump is a racist. Donald Trump is, in fact, a racist. Donald Trump is, in fact, taking advantage of everybody that he can, that he is self-serving and not national-serving, that he doesn't care about anybody else, that he's a liar, that he's a cheat. He's going to say the exact opposite of everything he said. Now, the question is what's his motivation? What was the motivation back when he talked about this in Cleveland in 2016? What was the motivation then compared to now? Here, then he was trying to help a man that he felt would be good for the United States of America to become president of the United States of America. Since that time, he's been to prison. His entire reputation has been destroyed. And it's been destroyed in large part due to his association with the man that he loved, the man that he praised, Donald Trump. And so now what's he looking for? He's looking for payback. He's looking for an opportunity to tear down the man that he said all of those gloriously wonderful things about. He's going to try to send him to prison where he was because it's the only way that he can think of to get revenge. It sounds repugnant for a reason. It is repugnant. It is also completely unbelievable. It cannot be allowed to happen. And I don't know what kind of lawyers President Trump is going to throw up there against this clown. I don't know what kind of defense he's planning to mount, but I do know this. It's going to take a miracle from God himself to find a jury that will acquit him. Knowing that Michael Cohen's a liar, and I hope the defense attorneys admit into evidence that video that I just played the audio portion of for you. I hope they admit that into evidence as proof of this man's credibility being non-existent, that Michael Cohen, the lead, you know, star witness, if you will, against Donald Trump, that he's a liar, that he's a cheat, that he'll say whatever it takes to advance his own agenda, no matter what, including under oath, including because he was already sent to prison again for being a liar. He lied to Congress for crying out loud. So now he's going to take another oath, and this time we're supposed to believe him? No. No, not for one moment. But a left-wing jury is guaranteed to come out of a population of Manhattan that is 90% left-wing. It's going to take a miracle, an act from God, an act of God, to get a jury to not listen to the lies of Michael Cohen and to acquit Donald Trump. And then the question becomes, what happens? What happens? Do conservative Republicans turn away from Trump because he's been convicted of something? Probably not. Chris Sununu was in camp Nikki Haley. Governor Sununu of New Hampshire was in the camp of Nikki Haley He went on George Stephanopoulos yesterday and got grilled for now supporting Trump. People like him, I'm not going to play the clip here because I want to get to callers, but people like him are believers in the conservative mission, and so they're going to support, the, you know, even if their number one candidate, in his case, Haley, didn't win, just like mine, you know, with DeSantis, you know, we're going to support the conservative candidate over the extraordinarily dangerous left-wing lunatic that is Joe Biden, and left-wing lunatic that is Kamala Harris, left-wing lunatic that is the entirety of the DNC. Of course we're going to do this. But what about the moderates? What about the moderates? If all of the MAGA camp stays united, and all of the Never Trumpers with TDS, Trump Derangement Syndrome, stay united, the issue is going to be decided by the moderates. Will the moderates vote for a guy that gets convicted in a case like this, particularly if he's sentenced to any kind of prison time? They're counting on the fact that they won't. That's the only reason this lawfare continues to go forth. 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. Phil is calling us from Philadelphia. Phil, welcome to the show. Go right ahead.
Hey, thanks, Bob, for taking my call. We were kicking around this Ukraine thing. It's absolutely nuts. It's like a money pit. It's like a faucet running. And as J.D. Vance, you got a fantastic senator right there. We got Dumb and Dumber here in Pennsylvania. So he's the guy. If he could introduce the Unlimited Funding for Ukraine and Our Allies Act. And what I mean by that is, if we drill domestically for $10 a barrel, we stop buying from Russia, Iran, and Venezuela, it would bring those three countries to their knees and stop funding their terroristic acts and their wars. And the difference between the $10 and what the market rate is, which is in our budget anyway to buy, that could go to fund Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. What do you think?
Well, I'm thinking, you know, we need to pinch every penny that we can, quite frankly, you know, with respect to foreign aid. I don't want money to go to Taiwan right now. Does that mean I'm not concerned about China? No, it doesn't. Right. I am. I also don't need, because it's not like this is a zero-sum game where what I mean by that is that we haven't given anything to Ukraine. We have given them. We have given them about $200 billion. We're a nation that's $34.5 trillion in debt. We've given Ukraine $200 billion because we do care about what happens to them, and we do care about Russia's incursion. We do care about, you know, what Putin's next move would be, and we're doing our part. But we have already done our part. The rest of the parts need to be done by Eastern European nations that have more skin in the game than we do. They're the ones.
Exactly.
That should have to do this. So I don't want to take any more of our treasure and send it into a place. By the way, there is legitimate concern that even if we funded Ukraine right now with every single weapon that they could even imagine and every one of their military needs was met, there is legitimate concern among people who are in the know that there are enough Ukrainian fighters yet to carry those weapons, to use those weapons, that they just don't have enough manpower, not military might, but manpower to even, you know, to win this war, to even fight for another year against Russia. Now, does that mean, again, that we throw in the, you know, chips? No, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying we have done our part for them. We cannot get involved in funding Taiwan right now. And I think a standalone bill to fund the only nation, our only ally, our only democratic ally, quite frankly, in the entire Middle East, that is, you know, I think the last gentleman, Mr. Levine, talked about this existential crisis. Their existence is literally on the line here. I think a standalone bill is what's called for here. Let's support Israel now while we still can. And we'll continue to give, you know, logistical help, but we cannot keep financing everything that goes on in Eastern Europe. We can't.
Thank you, Bob.
All right. Hey, Phil, before you go. Oh, he's gone. I was going to say, he said, we got Dumb and Dumber in Pennsylvania. And I was going to say, is anybody watching the massive shift that has taken place with Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman? When he won that race against Dr. Oz, Mehmet Oz, and remember when he couldn't string sentences together because of his brain, you know, his recovery from his brain injury? I mean, and when he did speak, he was just as radical could get. He has done some kind of weird 180 as he has recovered somehow. Remember, he's wearing his his hoodies and his, you know, baggy shorts into the Senate instead of, you know, dressing appropriately. He has done a weird 180. A lot of it because of Israel. He is 100% in support of Israel, but he sounds more coherent, and it's almost, not quite, but it's almost like he's been red-pilled. Almost a little bit. He's sounding more and more conservative as he regains his, you know, his sensibilities, if you will, or his cognitive abilities. It's a remarkable thing. I was going to ask that Pennsylvania caller there if he had any more thoughts on Fetterman, but we'll do that another time, I guess. Let's go to Gary in Seven Hills. Gary, thanks for waiting. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi, Bob.
Hello, Gary.
I find it hard to believe that Iran shot 300 missiles at Israel, and there was no damage done. My opinion is that the entire attack was negotiated ahead of time, so that none of the missiles would hit anywhere.
Negotiated with
Israel.
Whom?
Three parties: United States, Israel, and Iran. It makes the Mullahs look good because they can claim that they retaliated against Israel for the attack that Israel did on their troops in Syria. Mm-hmm. It makes and Israel comes out ahead because there was no damage done, and the United States can come out ahead because it looks like Joe successfully managed the situation. And what's the most telling thing about it is the price of oil has actually gone down. If there was actually trouble in the Middle East, the price of the oil would have gone up. The people in the know would have known that there was trouble. There is no trouble. It was entirely orchestrated and planned in advance, and that's my opinion.
Well, I'll tell you what, Gary, I hope your opinion is right. I hope your opinion is right to the extent that it is now over, except for the fact that it's never going to be over because all this was the direct attack from Iranian, okay, you know, soil. But the Iranian money, which, again, they still have billions of dollars that were, you know, fungible dollars, if you will, that can be repurposed, that are supposed to be for humanitarian, and we all know the drill. But they can put those funds however they want. But, you know, the proxies are still going to continue the attack and the assault on Israel. So, you know, if what you're describing is a way of, I don't know, letting everybody save face a little bit without anybody being hurt, I suppose that is something to hope is correct. But I hope that doesn't mean that, you know, they think Iran's hostilities to Israel are over, because they're not. They're just using their proxies.
Well, they're back to a low boil, but they're not at the heating point. And we'll know if this was real or not based upon Israel's response. You know, if that was a real attack, Israel would be down the throats of the Iranians right now.
Well, maybe, and they're maybe, but you know, here's the thing. They went, you know, into Gaza full bore when, in the very, you know, beginning periods of time, you know, weeks or a month or so, whatever, after October 7th, they went into Gaza full bore with the full support of the United States, which matters to them because, you know, we're one of the few nations in the world, maybe the only other nation in the world, quite frankly, that has Israel's back. So they went into Gaza full bore when they knew the United States had their support. Well, now, according to every report we're getting over the last 48 hours, Biden told Netanyahu, we're not going to back you if you do this, if you go after them. So to me, you know, I can see Israel holding off here because they don't have the support of the one ally that they would need the support of here. So I don't think they, you know, I don't know if it's necessarily a matter of, hey, if Israel doesn't go back at them hard right now, it means it was all staged. It just means they might realize that discretion is the better part of valor here until the United States says, yeah, we're in.
I think the real tell is the price of oil. The guys, the smart guys, the guys who know stuff, see that there's a conflict there.
That's a
okay,
fair
that's
point.
All I've got, Bob.
Thank you. Great call, Gary. That's a great call. I really appreciate that. If you're still on hold, stay there. We'll come to you. But we're going to take a time out here at the top of the hour. We're also going to talk taxes. We're going to find out exactly how much money of yours is going to be wasted on some of these other entanglements that it should not be. We'll talk to a tax expert coming up here after the top of the hour. It's going to be Patrick Hedger from the Taxpayers Protection Alliance. So stay here on Tax Day 2024. Always Right Radio, AM1420.com.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This is Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
All righty then. We move into hour number three on this Monday. It is the 15th morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord 2024, and you know what that means. How much more are you going to be robbed of today? How much theft is going to take place? Look, I've never been a believer in this whole taxation is theft mantra that a lot of people who are, you know, just angry about having to pay big tax bills. You know, taxation, look, there are things we do need to pay taxes for. I need police forces. We need roads. We need services. There are things that absolutely we expect our government to be able to provide for us. But those things are called the necessities, and that should be pretty much it. Meet our necessities, then leave us the hell alone. I think that's the mantra of all conservative-minded people. Just leave us alone, government. We don't need all of the extras, and we certainly don't need you raping us and then taking our money from us and then using it on things that have absolutely no impact on us. I'm looking at my wallet right now. And it's tax day, and I know that it is a lot lighter than it would have been without it being tax day. And they're taking that money that did weigh my wallet heavily. They're going to send it to Volodymyr Zelensky in Ukraine. Do I have a say in that? No, I do not. They're going to take it, and they're going to use it for woke projects, for LGBTQ organizations, for DEI organizations. They're going to take it and they're going to use it in all these different ways. And it doesn't matter how I feel about it. That's the frustration of it. And then the worst part. What did they just do? What did they just do in 2022? They passed a budget and they got it all signed and ready to go to hire 87,000 more IRS agents so that they can rob you just a little bit more blind, as if you weren't already completely sightless. Now they want to come and take even more. So prepare to be audited. Oh, but only $400,000 or more. Only people with $400,000 or more are the only ones they have to worry about. Really? You sure about that? Because I don't think there are 87,000, you know, multimillionaires in the United States of America where each one of them gets their own agent. All right, let's talk about Tax Day 2024. Now, Patrick Hedger is the executive director of an organization called Taxpayers Protection Alliance, the tax watchdog. Patrick, thank you for joining us this morning. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Boy, nobody likes Tax Day, but yet here it is. Here it is again. So in every single year, it seems like it gets more complex. Are they ever going to simplify the tax code? Before we get into some of the specifics, Patrick, are there any legitimate and serious suggestions or options on the table to simplify rather than make more complex our current tax code?
Well, you know, there's a few good messaging bills here and there. I know Senator Rand Paul has a few related to simplifying the tax code, and you hear it every year, you know, politicians say, well, we want you to be able to fill out your taxes on a postcard. I'd love for that to be the case. The issue is that you talked about in your intro a lot of the waste that goes on in the federal budget, but what the really nefarious thing that happens is that Congress does what's called spending through the tax code. So instead of ever having to cut a check, Congress can orchestrate your life, the economy. It can incentivize various social programs simply by changing how the tax treatment of the dollars that flow towards those things. And because there's so much power in granting subsidies and credits and loopholes and carve-outs through the tax code, there's not a huge incentive for Congress to ever simplify it. It's a way for them to allocate resources without ever having to cut a check. So So that's what we're up against. And unfortunately, it results in the tax code being tens of thousands of pages long, and basically nobody knows what it means in its entirety.
No, they don't. And that's what's the most frustrating thing. You know, when you get your taxes done, or especially if you do your taxes yourself, you try your best. Even if you try your level best to try to make sure you're filling out exactly right, that every I is dotted and every T crossed and every decimal point is in the right place and so on and so forth. And if you make a mistake because it's such a 10,000 plus page, you know, complex tax code, then they come after you. Then they want to take even more money. They want to charge penalties. They want to charge you interest and everything else. How do they expect everybody to be a mathematician or to be wealthy enough to hire a tax preparer who, you know, in some cases, they may not know a hell of a lot more than we do?
Yeah, and it's not just that most folks and tax preparers don't understand what's in the tax code. The Government Accountability Office is constantly looking at the IRS, and they've found that the IRS still has an issue of giving out incorrect information itself at its call centers and at its in-person centers. And like, I mean, if you call the IRS and get incorrect information and you still get audited, where's the recourse? It's a huge, huge problem. And certainly, you know, it's definitely a problem that folks have to outsource tax preparation. And even then, they're still not guaranteed to be entirely in compliance.
Yeah, we're talking to Patrick Hedger. He is the executive director of Taxpayers Protection Alliance, Tax Watchdog. So we're watching it, all right? We're watching it flow. Also, every year around this time, you'll get one or two politicians say, we really need to have a fair tax or a flat tax. Any real movement, do you think, among the political elites on something like that?
You know, again, the tax code is such a unique tool for Congress to exercise control that I doubt there would ever be a way realistically on the horizon to institute either of those policies. You know, I get worried about a fair tax because it could quickly turn into what we see in Europe, which is a European style value added tax, which significantly increases the tax burden, even though a consumption tax is a lot more efficient. You pay taxes when you do economic activity. That makes sense. You know, you're not robbing people of income. And certainly a flat tax, that would certainly ease compliance, but then Congress would have, a hard time subsidizing people making decisions they want to see you make, whether that's have a child or buy a home or install solar panels, things like that. We're really up against the incentive of Congress and the government wanting to control you through compliance with taxes.
Yeah, you know, that's a good answer. A terrible answer, but I mean, good, well explained. I appreciate that. I just can't stand the fact that they continue to do it the way that they do it. Okay, let's talk about some specific things. Changes this year, not changes in the code, but just changes in like American economics. So many more people are in the gig economy probably than ever before. They're content creators. They're self-employed. From what I understand, the self-employment tax is like kind of double taxation, right? I mean, you pay your income taxes, but then you have to pay a separate self-employment tax. I don't know exactly how that works, but I know a lot of people who are being bitten by it because, again, they're filing in the gig economy as self-employed independent contractors, if you will. Can you tell us how, you know, if that is something that could possibly lead to a change?
Yeah, so that self-employment tax is essentially that you pay both the employer and the employee share of your FICA tax, right? The taxes that go towards Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. If you work for a traditional employer instead of yourself, the employer usually covers half of that. So you are still paying it. That's money that could go into your pocket, but you're essentially it's being withheld for you by your employer. As a self-employed person, you're both paying the employee side and the employer side. So that's how you have that self-employment tax on FICA and Social Security. And you know, it stings, and it's not even closing the gap that we see in Social Security and Medicare, where those programs are headed towards a structural shortfall that's going to be really painful here in the next decade.
Okay, let's talk about direct file, Patrick. As I understand it, Biden is the IRS is weaponizing this program called direct file to serve as Americans' tax preparer, filer, and auditor. What does all that mean?
Yeah, so back during one of the big bills that was passed during COVID that spent oodles and oodles of money, there was a line item in there for about $15 million for the IRS to study the idea of having its own TurboTax, TaxSlayer online type system. The IRS was only asked to study it, and they just went ahead and did it anyway. The IRS is trying to become a software company now. Even though the IRS is still giving out incorrect information at its call centers and isn't processing returns on time, they've decided that even though they can't walk yet, they're going to start chewing gum and try to become a software company to compete with TurboTax and TaxSlayer now. I think it's really problematic for the IRS to be going down this road, one, again, because they're doing their core job well. They shouldn't be trying to do more. And then, two, there's really a necessary adversarial relationship in having a third party prepare your taxes for you. The third-party accountant or tax software has an incentive to make sure you get as much money back as you possibly, as legally possible. The IRS doesn't necessarily have that incentive. The IRS's job is to generate revenue.
I think most people know that, but you tell me, is this popular? Are people using it? Are people saying, yeah, I'd like the IRS to decide what my deduction should be. I'd like for them to. I'm sure they'll give me the most amount of money back that they possibly can. I'm sure the federal government would do that for me. Does anybody use this?
So this is the first year. So ultimately, we can't give, you know, the initial indications are that uptake is not anywhere near what the IRS projected. And of course, the GAO has also found that costs are way beyond what IRS projected. So lower uptake, higher costs than the IRS estimated. But most, I'm not exactly sure what this was intended, because there's already a program that gets confused with a lot called Free File. We're talking about Direct File, but there is Free File, which millions of people use, which is the ability to work with TurboTax or TaxSlayer or H&R Block. If you meet certain criteria, which is you have a pretty simple tax return, you just claim the standard deduction below a certain income level, you can file your taxes for free already. The IRS outsourced this to people that know what they're doing. So it's very bizarre to see the IRS just trying to build its own software again and become a software company, a lot like the Obamacare exchanges back in the day.
Patrick Hedger of Taxpayers Protection Alliance, Tax Watchdog, tell me about the rates. We kept hearing that during Trump's term, he lowered the taxes on the billionaires, millionaires and billionaires, and everybody else's went up. So I guess that would mean that with Biden here, that the taxes for everybody should have gone down if they were telling the truth, that everybody's tax rates, the millionaires and billionaires are being charged more, and the rest of us in the middle class are paying less. What are the actual real tax rates now compared to what they were 4 years ago?
Everybody's taxes under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which a number of those provisions expire in 2025, so we have to be vigilant about that. But everybody's statutory tax rates went down under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And basically, no matter which bracket you were in, your rates went down. And the standard deduction was massively increased. So that made tax compliance easier, and it also lowered taxes for a lot of folks because you don't need to itemize as many deductions. And to be able to get more money back, your standard deduction is much higher. But whether you're in the top 20% or you're in the middle 20% or the lowest 20%, your effective or statutory rate did go down, as well as the corporate tax rate massively fell. And we know that corporate tax incidence, right, who pays that tax is workers and it's consumers. Corporations pass taxes on very easily. So by lowering the corporate tax, you got a tax cut that way as well. But the Biden administration, through its inflationary policies and its desire to try and increase corporate taxation, is very much so violating that $400,000 and above promise.
Yeah, well, we knew that was never going to be kept because, well, a few things are, but particularly when it comes to taxes. Can you tell me this? I continue again. Every single Democrat on the Hill screams the same thing at this time of year, which is tax the rich, tax the rich. The rich don't pay their fair share. This is what needs to happen to our $34.5 trillion debt. We need to take it from the rich. And then you see a lot of memes online floating around. Well, the richest 1% pay X, the richest 10% pay X, the poorest 50% pay Y, and so on and so forth. What's the reality? What is the reality in terms of how much of the federal tax revenue is generated comes from the wealthiest Americans?
So the U.S. tax code is actually unbelievably progressive. It's far more progressive than even the most progressive European countries in that the rich pay higher rates and they pay a disproportionate share of their measure of total income versus their share of taxes doesn't line up, right? The top 20% pays, I think, somewhere on over 50% of the total tax revenue. So, and the, you know, the bottom 50% of the country for the most part are net beneficiaries of that spending through the tax code that I talked about earlier, various deductions and credits and things like that. So, the U.S. has effectively in the free world, the most progressive tax system, or one of the most progressive tax systems. The idea that the rich don't pay their fair share. I'm not exactly sure how much more of a fair share they're talking about. Usually they're conflating, when you hear those politicians doing that talking point, they're conflating investment income with traditional income. And they want to tax the money that Jeff Bezos and Warren Buffett have in the stock market. But those are investments in real companies. And we don't penalize investment for a reason, because investment creates jobs, creates opportunity, innovation. We don't want to be punishing that.
So they want to tax the money that's in the market, still actively supporting those companies, not talking about when they cash out.
Right, yeah. So they're looking at going after, you know, Elizabeth Warren is famous for talking about a wealth tax. So that's taxing, again, not unrealized gains in the marketplace. But anytime you hear somebody say, oh, well, Warren Buffett pays less than his secretary, that's because you're talking about two different types of income streams. You're talking about the rate that Warren Buffett pays when he cashes out of stock, the capital gains rate. We keep the capital gains rate lower traditionally because, again, capital gains are what incentivizes people to put their money in the market in the first place in order to generate economic growth.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm glad to hear you say that. Do you have real numbers on that, by the way? Like, what, you know, in terms of capital gains taxes versus income taxes, you know, and I know obviously that is progressive, as you say, based on the amount of income earned. But how much more is an income tax than a capital gains tax?
Well, you can be up in effective rates, including your state and local taxes. You could be up close to north of 50% in some states. At the highest end, if you're talking about just a flat income tax, mm-hmm. Or not a flat tax, but just talking about income taxes in isolation. But in terms of capital gains, we keep that low. I mean, I don't have the exact rate in front of me, but it's the highest capital gains rate is about half of the highest income bracket rate. And again, that's because you don't want to penalize investment. And that's a word that you never hear when politicians are talking about taxing the rich, is that they're, for the most part, all of the wealth of the billionaires is tied up in the market. So if you start taxing that, you're going to hurt people with 401ks as well.
That's right. That's exactly right. Businesses get hurt. People's investment incomes, their retirements, 401ks, IRAs, and so forth get hurt as well. Finally, let's close with this. The 87,000 agents that were so famously, you know, hired. Well, they weren't hired at the time, but they budgeted for 87,000 new hires with the Inflation Reduction Act. How many of them have been hired, and what does that mean for chances of auditing for everyday average American taxpayers?
They're struggling to hire at this point. The reports are, we've got a lot of different reports out there, but they certainly haven't gotten the 87,000 in quite yet. Luckily, Congress was able to strip away about $20 billion of the $80 billion of new funding for the IRS, so that's important. But unfortunately, what we're seeing is that prior to the injection of this cash, if you lined up audit data across the country with the census tracts that show you where the poorest people live, those look like the same maps. So the IRS was effectively auditing poor counties at a much higher rate than wealthier areas. And that's because they have an incentive to go after the low-hanging fruit. A lower-income American doesn't have the resources to hire lawyers and accountants to fight back. And what we're seeing with this new injection of cash into the IRS is that, yes, enforcement has gone up, but they're just going after slightly higher fruit. And they're going after what you would consider maybe middle class or upper middle class earners, you know, not necessarily the guy sitting on his yacht.
Do we still have to worry, in your opinion, Patrick, that if we donate money to charities that have the words Patriot in them or the words, 912 Tea Party? We all remember the IRS scandal from during the Obama years. Is that still a concern? Are they targeting people based on their conservative ideology, do you think? They'll never admit it, but, I mean, effectively, are they?
I don't think there's a systemic a problem with that, but there are certainly bad actors when you have such a huge agency. We're talking about tens of thousands of employees and many, many more contractors as well. We recently saw an IRS contractor that was prosecuted, thankfully caught and prosecuted, sent to several years in prison for leaking the private tax information of multiple billionaires as well as donors to Nikki Haley's PAC. All of that was private confidential information and showed no wrongdoing, mind you, but was used as a way to try and generate political support for tax reforms to increase donor disclosure and also to raise rates for billionaires. That's really problematic. So you've got a lot of bad actors within the IRS, and you've got a lot of bad cybersecurity practices as well that makes a lot of this data easy to leak. So they should be taking a lot more of those resources instead of hiring new enforcement agents and buying new computers.
Yeah, very, 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 very informative conversation, Patrick. I really appreciate all the great data. Patrick Hedger is Executive Director of Taxpayers Protection Alliance. Is there a website, any place we can send people to learn more?
Yeah, absolutely. It's www.protectingtaxpayers.org.
Protectingtaxpayers.org. I'm going to punch it up right now as we head into our bottom of the hour break. Patrick Hedger, thank you so much for shining a light on all of this. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You got it. All right, we'll take a timeout now. Always Right Radio on AM 1420.
The Answer.
11:35, Always Right Radio, AM 1420. The Answer. You got a question, you got a comment, you want to get in. We got time for a few more phone calls here in the last segment. But before I go to your phones, or your calls rather, on the phones, Balderson. Joyce. Latta. Miller and Turner. Oh, and Wenstrup. Those are all Republican members of Congress who voted to spy on you without a warrant, who voted to give the federal government the power to surveil you without a warrant. They were among 86 Republicans to cast those votes that against what would have been an amendment that required the government to get a warrant to actually have a reason to surveil you and to spy on you. Section 702 of the FISA Act, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, is meant to target foreign adversaries, but it's used to surveil Americans as well and their private communications without a warrant. This bill or this amendment that Andy Biggs in Arizona put together would have required a warrant for Americans, would have required a warrant to spy on Americans. Speaker of the House Mike Johnson cast the deciding vote. They put it into a 212 to 212 tie, which means it was defeated. 86 Republicans, including the Speaker, were among those that wanted to the government to be able to spy on you. Just to let you know how popular that is, a recent YouGov poll commissioned by FreedomWorks and Demand Progress found that 76% of Americans, 76%, support a warrant requirement. Only 12% were opposed to that. Yet your Ohio representation, or a large portion of it, of Republicans voted to kill that amendment so that the government can't spy on you without a warrant. Balderson, Joyce, Miller, Latta, and who did I say? Turner. All of the, oh, and Wenstrup. That's what, six of them? Did I count six there? All of them voted for, Jim Jordan voted against it. Or I'm sorry, voted for the amendment to require the warrant. The rest of these conservative Republicans, I don't know. What do we have? Do we have a Congress full of trans Dems like we have an Ohio House full of trans Dems? Is that what it is? Are the Republicans who are transitioning into Democrats? Because that's the only way I can see this. It's unbelievable. Some of the supposed conservatives outside of Ohio voted against that amendment as well. Elise Stefanik, who's supposed to potentially be a Donald Trump consideration for vice president, she voted against it. Nope, no warrant required. The government can watch and listen to your communications and monitor them as much as they want. Dan Crenshaw from Texas, supposedly a conservative. Are you kidding me? Not even close. Who else? Gallagher, who's leaving on his way out the door, just kicks the American people right between the legs. cast this vote against it. Tony Gonzalez in Texas, supposed to be a conservative. Speaker Mike Johnson, as I said, from Louisiana. Look, I mean, this list, it just goes on and on and on. The true conservatives are the ones who say that the courts should have to have a warrant to spy on Americans. These people, none of them are conservative. That includes every one of these Ohio representatives, including Northeast Ohio's own Max Miller. I'm sorry. It is what it is. TJ is in Cleveland. TJ, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, Bob, I totally agree with your guest and your one caller. There's something real fishy about this attack. And, you know, I see it as winners for everybody. Iran won. They had a great propaganda thing, how they hit the Satan with a massive attack. Israelis won. They've got good propaganda themselves there that we thwarted this great attack without probably a single casualty. Joe Biden won. Now, he can say he put real restraints on Israel not to retaliate. And the American industrial complex really won, because they're going to get to replace hundreds of these missiles. The only one that lost in this attack, the way I see it, is the American taxpayer.
Well, you're not wrong. You're not wrong about all of those things. I still don't know if it was necessarily coordinated with the approval of the American government. I pray to God it was not. Because like I said, you know, TJ, I would trust an Iranian about as far as I could pick one up and throw one. And what I mean by that is, if the Americans, and this is what Larry Levine said, if the Americans in the Pentagon or in the White House knew what Iran was planning and didn't warn Israel of it, and then Iran took it too far, and then and dropped something that was much more substantial on a village, what would that do? What would that do? Especially if it was found out that we knew. That's what I'm saying. They would have been putting an awful lot of trust in an American enemy, the Iranians, the ones who are funding all of the other attacks on Israel, you know, by way of their proxies. It would have been a hell of a thing for us to just say, okay, we're going to let you launch 300 missiles, make sure they don't do any damage, make sure they're easy enough for us to shoot down. Because that would be putting trust in these enemies, TJ. And like I said, what would have happened if they would have said, ha, 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 they're going to let us do it now and watch what damage we do?
Well, first of all, Iran does not want to go to war with us, okay? They realize our capabilities, taking out their warships, taking out their power plants. I mean, we can do it. They know we can do it. They don't want, at this point, they don't want a war with the United States.
But it wouldn't be it wouldn't be a war just between Iran and the United States, because you know Russia backs Iran. And that, of course, would probably make us back up a little bit.
Well, I if that happened and there was massive damage, I don't think Biden would have any choice. Israel would not have any choice but the massive retaliation, and Biden would have no choice but to back him.
The worst thing, like you said,
it's scary because something could have, if this was the plan, something could have went wrong.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
But I think most of these missiles, you know, these pretty precision missiles they're firing, they were heading towards area, and they even said Saturday night, it appears like most of them are going to North and South Israel, very sparsely populated areas. They were put up there, I think, to be shot down. And like it says, all around, everybody becomes a winner with this, except us, because now we got to replace a few hundred million dollar missiles. So it's the American taxpayers that really got hosed on this one.
TJ, good call, my friend. Thank you. Appreciate it. Let's go to Charlie in Brownholm. Hey, Charlie, go ahead.
Hey, Bob. Thank you for taking the call. I wanted to congratulate you on your receiving the Ohio Value Voters.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you and everybody else at OVV on that board. Yeah, that was an amazing thing.
You're in good company, Jim Jordan, Janet Folger. It's just Patrick Henry was the patriot that we all look to. So you're a patriot.
Absolutely. Well, I was very humbled by that. Thank you, Charlie.
Very good. I was thinking, you know, this whole thing with this hush money, the person who should be in jail, she took the money to hush. And she went and spilled her beans. So she broke the law. This Stormy Daniels, she should be on trial.
NDAs are not uncommon. You know, non-disclosure agreements are not uncommon in contractual agreements, particularly if there's a threat of a lawsuit and we come to a settlement. And if we agree on settling something and keep it out of court and we, you know, sign an NDA, if you do that, yeah, you are in some serious liability there. Nobody's even talking about that part.
Right. And Bill O'Reilly was saying all this stuff against Trump, all this, the people want justice. And when they see this as injustice, there's going to be an intangible group of people, Democrats, independents, they're going to say, no, we have, you know, and I just think they're creating a destiny.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.